Survivor's Guide to True Crime includes discussions of sexually based violence and is not intended for children. Information provided should not be used as a substitute for professional medical or legal advice. Please exercise discretion and self-care.
Hey, Kim.
Hey, Kara. Welcome back to Survivor's Guide to True Crime.
Yeah, we're super ecstatic to be here.
You can tell by our monotone voices.
Yeah, you will notice a significantly lower vibe in the room today.
It has been raining here in Colorado for what feels like long enough to build an ark. I am so sick of it. I love about Colorado that there is always sun and snow melts really fast. I mean, people think Colorado and it's like, oh, mountains and really cold winters and snow. And that's not at all what it is. We're in a desert climate. It's usually very sunny, mild weather. And the fact that it has been raining and gray just makes me want to do nothing and watch Twilight.
Let's hear it. Seasonal affective disorder. Who?
It's me.
I saw Twilight on the plane.
Yes.
And I was like, I guarantee Kim would have watched that.
You act like I don't watch it every time. Even if I'm not watching a movie and maybe I'm editing or something, I always have it on my other device and it's just playing. It's comfort. Okay, so how was Dallas? Because again, I feel like in our little fortresses of emotional and mental solitude, we haven't got to talk at all.
I know. So Dallas was great. You know, I took my son with me, and even though I was trying to positive affirmation my body into not having pregnancy symptoms, I have them, shockingly. You know, I figured I'd just try something new, see if it worked. The funny thing is that I don't feel as bad as I did with my second pregnancy somehow, but it's like I don't feel as bad, but I feel worse. I don't even know how to explain that. My symptoms are not anywhere near as bad, but I'm just like, I can't do anything.
Well, and let's also take a moment to appreciate the fact that you are how many years older now than with your last pregnancy?
Yeah. So Dallas, I kept saying to my son, so I took my 9-year-old and I kept saying to him, man, I'm sorry. I don't feel like this is a very exciting trip for you. And he's like, no, mommy, I'm having so much fun. We've done so many things. And I was like, you're so sweet. Because there was a lot of just kind of like, I'm just going to lay here for a couple of minutes, buddy.
Yep.
And the last day we were there, that's literally what we did, is we spent pretty much the whole day in the hotel room. We left for a couple of hours. And then he was like, can we order dinner? And I was like, aww. You are a child after my own heart. He's like, I just don't really want to leave the room.
Oh,
I love you so much. But yeah, the event was fantastic. It kind of changed my mind about, I've always thought that speaking to law enforcement was like my bread and butter, my absolute favorite thing to do. And I still think that it is absolutely one of my favorite things to do. But I was telling my husband how much I enjoyed speaking to, it was a realtor's conference. Mm. And so I shared my story and then just kind of lessons of resilience and like how to overcome things like that. And afterwards, just the response that I had from people, it was very refreshing. And I think sometimes we can forget what we're doing in this world because we're inundated with it. And I was telling my husband about what it meant and the stories that people were coming up to me and sharing with me afterwards and hearing what my story meant to them. And he's like, I think it just sounds like you just really like your job. And I was like, oh, I do. I love this. I don't love, you know, having to peel myself off the bed necessarily right now to do this. But I do. I love this and I love keynote speaking. And that was just a real beautiful highlight of what I got to go to Dallas for.
Yeah. I think sometimes we get stuck in our own echo chambers because we are so used to talking to law enforcement or university students or whoever it might be. And then when you get to present to a group who isn't constantly inundated with the same types of stories, it's like, hey, yeah, this is out of the ordinary. This isn't something that everybody experiences in some capacity and they're used to hearing about. This is important information and stories that help usher in those things that you're supposed to learn when you have these kinds of speeches. I think that's something really important too that I have found as I'm getting back into the campus speaking circuit. There's a lot of people that were hesitant to have victims come and speak on campuses because a lot of folks, especially when you're asking, like, when do I know that I can get into it? you have to be able to select someone who is not going to pass their trauma onto an audience while sharing that story. And it is a really fine line and something that you have to finesse and learn as you develop in your speaking career or sharing or advocacy. And I have found there's a lot of people that still do that. And I forget that sometimes, probably because when I'm surrounded by survivors like us who have been doing it for so long and aren't as impacted when we share, it's hard to forget that there's a lot of people that are just starting out that may pass along that trauma. So if you are one of those people that's asking, when do I know? When can I start? It's when you know that you are not going to pass on your trauma to someone else by way of sharing. You are there to share the pieces that are healed, that you can learn from, and that there is something that that person can take out of it other than just hearing your story.
Yeah, I can see how that's definitely a good piece of advice. It's different than what we normally hear, but I like that.
I have to say too, I was waiting to get my son's birthday present from Amazon and it was about to be delivered. You know how you get the little thing that's like, it's 10 stops away. And so I'm sitting there waiting for it and the doorbell rings and I run out there because I don't want him to see it. I'm like, this is weird. The package looks different. Well, it wasn't his gift yet. That was coming 10 stops away. It was of Remy's book that he sent to me and Mike. I open it up and he's got the little Amazon note in there. I was like, oh my gosh, something about holding it in your hands. And I saw you post about this too. So I got it and I was like, this is so cool. And I know I haven't known him for as long as you have, but like holding it there and knowing all of the things that he went through to get to that point, I opened it up. I was just going to look at the cover and how it's put together. And I ended up sitting there. Mike's like, so am I in charge of dinner? Yup. Yeah. And I've had to take a few breaks. It is so easy to read. I think that's what I appreciate the most about it. It's like, while it is very intellectual and hard hitting and amazingly inspirational, it's also a very fluid, easy read. And I love it because so many pieces of it just interact and how he wove it all together is masterful. There have been a few spots where I'm like, this is a brand new book. I can't dog ear the pages and highlight and put my notes in the margin yet, but I really want to.
Whatever the heck you want.
Not yet. I have yet to take a picture of it looking all crisp and clean and put it on my stories and stuff, but it's so great. And I'm about to finish it probably this afternoon. I'm really excited, but I've been taking pictures of a few key phrases and texted in that I was just incredibly impressed. And I hope everyone goes out and gets the book. It's he did such a great job. I'm just so proud.
Yeah. And I mean, other things to be proud of. He's already a bestseller. Like he's already hit multiple bestseller marks. And I'm just so proud of him as a friend and as a fellow survivor to have shared his voice and his story in that way.
Yep. It was beautifully, beautifully done. Congratulations, Remy. I really hope everyone here goes out and gets that book. We will make sure to post that in stories and stuff on social media again if you need that link. But it was so well done. And I can't wait to share some of the things that really hit home for me throughout the next few weeks, too.
Yeah.
Speaking of friends of the show, one of our previous guests, Michael Rourke, you may know him.
I think I've heard of him before.
You've heard.
I think so.
He will be delivering his TED Talk here in a couple of weeks. And it's a very big secret what they actually speak on, what the talk is going to look like, what the name of it is. I have been one of only a very few people, shockingly, that have gotten here to read him. And I have not helped a whole lot. I've really tried to let him have his own experience with this. And he's done a great job. Shout out to Helena. She is his speaker coach for this. I love and adore her, and I know she listens to the podcast, but she did a great job helping him along. And I can't wait for everyone to hear this too, because I will not be shocked if it surpasses mine in views within the first 2 weeks of being live. I really hope it does. It's such an important message. It's going to make a huge splash, and I'm so excited for him to make his Red Dot debut.
That's so exciting. Yay. Congratulations, Mike.
Hey.
Yay. Congratulations. Sorry, I have more excitement inside of me.
You also have a human inside of you.
Oh, that's the size of a blueberry. Just sucking the life from me. It's worth it. It's worth it. I sent Kim a message this morning and I was like, whose idea was this to get pregnant? I'm smarter than this. I mean, I don't regret it in any way, shape, or form, but struggle is me.
You can be happy and also appreciate the fact that you're growing a freaking human and it's hard.
At 30 I'm not 37 yet. I'm 36.
Oh, yeah. I always forget that.
But I will be 37 when this baby is born. So yeah. just go ahead and say it.
Those of you who are interested in things like this, Kara and I are both Virgos. And that probably explains a lot. Those of you who are into those things.
I mean, I literally told someone last time. You're going to appreciate this. So I went to dinner with some friends last night. I rode home with one of my friends. It was her birthday. That's why we all went to dinner. And we were just talking. And I was like, yeah, so I'm kind of like 5% an asshole. I feel like that's kind of an underestimate.
I was going to say five. Are we here?
Okay, maybe it's more like 20% asshole. I don't know. It depends on the day. But she was like, no, that's why I love you. And I was like, because of an asshole? She's like, I'm not saying you're an asshole.
It's a low percentage asshole. Everyone needs a little bit of asshole. Foul phrasing. Everyone needs to be.
Yeah, you know?
Everyone needs to be just a little bit.
It's called boundaries. I mean, sometimes I am just like, so most of it is like internal and to Kim and my husband. They're basically the ones that hear most of my,
the asshole catch-alls. Again, phrasing. God, we gotta move on.
Well, that's a great intro. Yep. How do people take us seriously? Honestly, we are legitimate professionals, friends.
Are we sure that they do? Oh, hey, guys, we just made a really great top 10 list.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, that was really cool. Oh. We did. Okay, so there's an article out. Was it Parentology, right? Yes.
Yeah.
Parentology, the top 10 ethical true crime podcasts. So we're there with some of our other friends and people that you may know. But that was really exciting to get that little shout out yesterday.
I know.
To know that people see us and they hear us and we're doing things that matter.
Yay.
So thank you.
And we're in great company. We also had made Upworthy last month. We love that there's some press generating that'll hopefully bring in new folks to hear what we have to say, our ridiculousness and all. But
yeah,
it's been very nice. And those are fun little rewarding moments. But at the heart of all of it is that people are getting something out of this that helps them in their everyday lives.
Yes. Amen. All right. So today on the podcast, we have Benzi Diaz. Benzi is a survivor of domestic minor sex trafficking.
When we talk about sharing our stories and just getting started, Benzi is in that space, but doing so in a way that really should be looked to as an incredible model. Today, she's a thriving advocate, influencer, and businesswoman.
Benzi has dedicated her endeavors to breaking the molds and stigmas of what a survivor is supposed to be. She's testified at the Pennsylvania State Senate, coordinated drives for youth and homeless, and has worked with celebrities.
Her efforts over the past 6 years have been nationally recognized, and she has been deemed one of the most influential women in the tri-state area, all before the age of 30.
I think you guys are going to love this conversation with Benzi. I mean, I know Kim and I had both of us crying. So be forewarned, you're probably going to feel some feelings, but it's just, she is a powerhouse. And to know that she's doing all of this at her age, I'm so proud of her. I'm proud to call her a member of our survivor family. So here's our conversation with Benzi. This week, we have my new friend, Benzi, and I'm so excited for you all to hear this conversation. Welcome to the podcast, Benzi.
Thank you. Thank you.
We start each of our episodes with an icebreaker. So tell us, what is your current binge, whether it's a TV show, movie, book, series? What's your binge right now?
Ooh, All-American Homecoming. I don't know if you've heard of it. It's on Netflix. It's in its fifth season, but it's based around high school athletes. That's where it starts. High school athletes. It shows a really good depiction of what high schoolers go through. I remember I'm 26, so I was a high schooler not too long ago. And while I'm watching the show, I'm like, wow, I was definitely going through that. And do you know, like, as you know, when you were in school, your parents or your teachers were like, it's not that important. You'll get over it. You're only 12, there'll be more heartbreaks. And I used to hate hearing that because I just know how I felt. And this show does a really great job, whether it's a teacher, a parent, even the friends, they really validate emotions, big, small, stupid, like it doesn't matter. Like the camaraderie between the students, the kids, it's really awesome and dope to see. Because one thing that was restricted away from me as a kid was TV. I wasn't allowed to watch TV. So the way I got hip to what was going on TV. So I didn't look like the weirdo in school, was just listening to my friends talk about, oh, did you see the episode of so-and-so? And I'm on YouTube on my phone, like, episode 5. Like, oh yeah, you remember when she was sitting on the stairs? And I remember that too, girl. And I'm like, I do not know what that she was talking about. So my nice little treat to myself, also healing your inner child, is kicking back and watching TV. So I find these cute little shows that I know I would have loved as a kid, but I'm like, oh my God, like I could see myself in each one of these characters. And it's really dope to see that they're being validated, because all I heard as a kid was that you're not validated and you shouldn't be because you're not an adult. And it's like, you don't understand the pain that we're going through. Like, everything was a big deal to me at that age. Everything is still a big deal to me. And just because of my age, it didn't matter the magnitude. Like, if I felt like my world was coming to an end, I needed someone to validate that for me back then. So yeah, that's like the new thing that I'm watching now.
There's so much to that, though.
Yeah, it's really cool. And I get into like the kiddie shows, like the more like high school, college based shows, because they're almost more realistic than like the SVUs, or, you know, because I'm like, this is so staged. As a survivor watching these shows, I'm like, that doesn't happen like that. So that starts to get on my nerves a little bit. But seeing these more youth empowerment, you know, shows, they definitely grab my attention, because I feel like I get to like see a nice, genuine, honest, innocent childhood, because I definitely didn't get that. So I'm killing two birds with one stone there. I got to live in my little kid world as I'm watching this show, and then like analyze it as, you know, an advocate, as a survivor, as like an adult, and be like, you know, that's really great. Whoever's behind the show is like really dope. So yeah, that's what I'm watching.
That's cool. I feel like what I've heard it compared to is Friday Night Lights, which I watched when, have you ever watched Friday Night Lights?
Mm-hmm.
I watched that when it was airing, and I've recently rewatched it. And I'm like, now I know why I loved it so much then, because I was probably around the same age you are when it came out. And I was like, this show is just so good.
Yeah.
So I may have to add it to my list on Netflix. I need something binge worthy.
It's really good.
The Summer I Turned 30 was another one of those. That one was a total young adult brain just melting. Oh my gosh, I love this. And it makes me feel like a kid. So that's a good one too.
Like warm and fuzzy.
Mm-hmm. Because we've all been there in some capacity. But I really liked that one. And my niece and I really bonded over that too. And
oh yeah.
She's 13. It's okay. It's fine. All right, so moving on to the survivor's guide side of things, we would love for you to tell us, to your level of comfort, what makes you a survivor, how you landed on Survivor's Guide to True Crime, your true crime and survivor story.
Yeah, definitely. So I am a survivor of child domestic human trafficking. Breaking that down, as a child, I was solicited by my father with sex for places to live, food in our fridge, you know, nice cars to ride around in, things like that. I was abused by him and also other men that were in his circle. You know, we all have like those aunts and uncles that aren't related to us, but they've been like our parents' best friends for years and years. So the relationship wasn't the same as far as like my dad knowing these people, but it was supposed to be that way when it was brought to me. Like, this is Uncle so-and-so, this is Uncle so-and-so. I would say that's how it started. I hesitate a lot, and I pause, because when I talk about it, well, for a long time, I was thinking that I was the problem. I was thinking, oh, when I came around, this idea just magically popped in your head one day. You were sitting on the couch watching a movie, a show. I don't know, but I didn't understand it. And I would say in this past like 6 months, I've found out information through relatives, through close friends that have validated things to where the picture was already made before I was born. Like the things that he was doing that they were into was way before I was even thought about. You know what I mean? So understanding that now as an adult, being away from the situation, I'm able to look at it with a different set of eyes, which is why I'm able to feel comfortable telling my story. So I would say I don't have the perfect introductory on how to introduce myself, because at the end of the day, I'm like, how do you introduce some crap like that? Like, right. Hey guys, my dad used to touch me, and all his friends used to too. Like, well, and I'm originally from the South. I was born and raised in Charlotte, North Carolina, and then I spent some time in Florence, South Carolina, which is right outside of the Myrtle Beach area. So certain things I was not exposed to. Like I said, TV was something that I wasn't allowed to watch. So as far as seeing things that even looked close to my life, I didn't know what that looked like. All I saw were the kids around me and my friends and what their lives looked like. And it looked nowhere near like mine, not in the house. Now, I will say on the outside looking in, oh yeah, we definitely fit the part, which at the end of the day was the bigger goal, was the end goal. But on the inside is what I knew. Girl, you're not going through what I'm going through at home, you know, on the inside of those walls. So it made me feel weird. It made me feel like as soon as I say something, they're going to think I'm lying, because who would do this? Like, a parent wouldn't do this. So they're going to be like, she's crazy. Please go put her somewhere. She needs to be handled with, because she's telling lies. And I remember I was in the fifth grade, and each grade level had a counselor. And I went to my counselor and told her that I was being abused. And Child Protective Services showed up at my house that afternoon, like that, like early evening, right before the dinner time area. And I remember seeing the car, seeing the seal on the side of the car. And I was like, and the bad thing about it was I was like, I'm in trouble. I heard conversations and I heard laughs and giggles downstairs, and I was confused because I was like, this is not how I thought this would go. No one talked to me. I seen what the lady looked like from looking out the window, but she came in. She was there for about 5-10 minutes and then left. Shortly after that, my parents sat me and my brother down and they said, if you do that again, one, we're going to beat you. Two, they're going to take you away and separate you too, which I know is true. I do know when kids do get taken by the state, even if you are siblings, you will get separated. For me, my brother was my everything. He's 2 years younger than me. We grew up and everyone thought he was my girl twin because of how much we looked alike. So we were just always so very close. And I felt the abuse that I felt like I was enduring was to protect him. And I took that on as a kid, very young. So it got to an age where I wasn't afraid of the violence that I was going to get from them. It got to a point where I really was like, whatever you throw at me is fine. I don't care. You can't take me away from my brother. Like, that's the last thing that I'm going to let happen. So do whatever you feel like you need to do with me. At this point, he had drove my mom away, strung her out on drugs. She was in and out of the jails due to him doing a lot of backdoor things and placing a lot of things under her name that wasn't true. So it left us in the care of him. And once he completed that goal, that's when things escalated to a whole new level. It was to the point where every day it was some sort of touch in some sort of way. And the anger and the aggression in me just got more, like, just, it just started to bubble to the point where I was like, you know what? Maybe I should go through and do these things that I'm thinking of doing to you in my head. Like, it really got to that point, you know? And it was just always my brother where I'm like, you know what? I can't do it. And I was, let's be honest, I was a little Black girl of the South. So I knew at a young age, I had to already play my cards very, very carefully. And I knew also at a young age, the business that my parents were in, I knew they were in illegal businesses at a young age. I just didn't know that it would escalate to the point where I was going to be involved and I was going to be the one that was being bought and sold. You know what I mean? I don't know how to introduce that. I don't know how to introduce that. It's so heavy. I start to cry. I make people cry. I don't like it. I don't like it. But it's real. And I think it's more common than people would think. I have people to this day that constantly reach out to me that are like, this happened to me too. And I don't know how to heal. Can you help me? And I'm like, whoa. Like, I'm just now getting to the point where I feel like I can just handle my shit. And the last thing I want to do is take on someone else's trauma and not handle that with care, because it took me so long and it's a never ending journey healing. So But it is an eye opener when I realize that people that I've interacted with for years over social media are like circling back around and they're like, yeah, that happened to me too. And I'm like, sadly, I know you're not the only one, sis. I know. It's just hopefully by stepping out and being on as many platforms as I can and sharing my story, it becomes more of a taboo to speak about being the victims and survivors of things because it's not our fault. I felt like the longer I sat in that theme of it being my fault, I couldn't see the beauty of the other side, whether I chose to share my story publicly or not, just the inner healing that I had to do within myself that had to like smack me, punch me in the jaw. Like it had to hit me so clear. Like it got to the point that there was nothing else I could do to numb the pain away. I couldn't think of another business to build. I couldn't go date another guy. I couldn't take on another subject in school. It was like, girl, it's right there in front of you. Like there's no way you're going to be able to get around it. And you get to the point where you can't take on too much more. You're going to just crack. And those cracks happened for me. I broke. I attempted suicide for the first time in my college dorm room. That for me was like, something has to change. I didn't know how, what, where to start. But I was like, this is not okay. Because I would never want to do this to myself, but I know why I want to. It was in that moment where I was like, I got to start shaking this off. And the biggest fear of mine for coming out publicly was people remembering the closeness that me and my dad shared to the public eye outside of our house. If you saw me, you saw him. If you saw him, you saw me. I was a daddy's girl. But no one knew why we were as close as we were and why he had this such of a strong hold on me, even after leaving, even after being married. I would say up until maybe 3-4 years ago, where I finally had to cut that cord and be like, this is really like a dead situation right now. And not to say I didn't try and rectify and help and understand and forgive, because I did all of that. I understood that I couldn't keep meeting things with anger and frustration if I wanted to be able to heal. So I said, if I want these answers to my questions, then I got to get myself together to be able to handle this, if that's what you want to do. Now, if you don't want to do it, then just cut your losses and go on about your day. But I don't know if it's the Southern girl in me that always wants her family to stick together, but you change to still be in my life or don't, and good riddance. It ended up being in not changing. Okay, good riddance. And I haven't talked to him since. I walked away from that. I remember the last conversation I had with him, and it was me yelling at him, telling him, all these years I protected you. All these years I didn't say anything. And this is how you still treat me. And in that moment, that's when I was like, you're still protecting him for what? For what? And the fear of whatever image you guys had, you were a child. Whoever wants to have an opinion about that, I mean, have your opinion, but I was a child at the end of the day. And if you're a parent, you have a responsibility, which is to protect your child. And you did the exact opposite. So once I was able to be confident in that, I was like, what do I have to lose? I'm like snotting. When do I snot? Never.
It comes with the feelings.
I know. I'm like, when does this ever? I'm like all shiny. I'm like, God, that's what I get for not wearing makeup. I'm like, I'm going to just do like brows, lashes. You're good. You're not going to cry anything. Miss optimism. That's one thing I can say. I'm always miss optimism, even to my own default sometimes. I'm like, no, you're good, girl. Do your thing. You're good.
I had to laugh a little bit when you're like, how do I even do this? Because this is something Kim and I have talked about. I think we did talk about it actually on the podcast with Anna, where it's like, what's your elevator pitch when people are like, so what do you do for a living? And you're like, Well, I was kidnapped by a serial killer. Like, you know, it's like, how do you even begin to tell people that? You're in good company and you'll figure it out. But you also just don't have to tell people.
Right.
You don't have to give them an elevator pitch all the time.
Yeah.
Yeah. And it can change day by day with what you're comfortable in. And there's no right answer and there's no wrong answer. You're showing up as yourself,
yeah,
and doing the work that you can do that day for the reasons that you know are right in your heart. And if that's all that comes out, great. That's okay. We need a little business card that just has a blank space on it where they're like, I don't know. They don't make resumes for this.
We should just have one for like just a QR code. It goes to websites like, do you really want to know? It's like, yes, no. It's like, but really, really, do you want to know? Do you want the safe answer that's going to make you comfortable? Or do you want like the reality? Like,
yeah.
Kim's internal gears
I
are.
Know.
She's like,
I feel a BuzzFeed quiz going on.
I know. Like BuzzFeed quizzes, QR codes. Like we are just like cutting edge here.
We are so thankful for all of your support. We're also supported by Cured.
They are a supplement company that is changing the industry standard for how supplements are made. They are products that I use every day that have genuinely changed my life.
Kara, of course, is the one who introduced me to them, and I was a little hesitant at first, but I can say after using their products for the last couple of months, I'm hooked.
My favorites that I think everyone should try and will love are the Serenity, Zen, and Rise. Serenity gummies have ashwagandha, L-theanine, and CBD. They're going to help you to just relax, take the edge off at the end of a long day or whenever you need it. Zen is going to help you fall asleep, stay asleep, and sleep soundly. Hallelujah. And Rise is going to give you sustained energy and focus without caffeine or without a crash.
I was really hesitant to try anything I view as a sleep aid, but I can say after incorporating Zen into my nighttime routine, I am getting such better sleep.
Yes. And for all of our listeners, you can use code KARA10. Go to curednutrition.com or go to the link in our show notes to take you straight to the website. We hope that you love it as much as we do.
So some of the things that I heard you say that I want to highlight, because it reminds me of a conversation that we had with Avrami Zippel. He was a childhood abuse survivor, and Kim and I specifically sought out people with experiences that were different than ours. And one of the things that I consistently hear across people who experience childhood abuse at the hands of someone they know and love are some of the things that I heard you say, where it's, what was wrong with me? The risk of watching TV and how that basically could give you information to know how wrong these things are. That the fear is sort of implied. It's, they're going to think I'm lying. And then when the Department of Childhood Protective Services, whatever it's called there, DSS here, when they respond, they don't talk to you. And then you thought you were in trouble. All of these things are just, they're so common in childhood abuse. And I feel like that's what almost makes childhood abuse so much more insidious, is that it's so internalized and it almost feels like you're in a prison of your own making, is what I feel like I hear from people.
Yeah, absolutely. And it's always like this, not a conundrum, I would say, but if you saw me as a kid, you know, if I wasn't president of some club in school, I was some stellar athlete in whatever sport I chose to play. And not to say I don't love sports, because I say that's what saved me, honestly. Like, that's what saved me, sports and my academics. But that was drilled in me to the point where if I messed up even a little bit in any one of those areas, the consequences, like, oh my gosh. And that magnitude of fear at that young of an age. Yeah, you could call me an accelerator, an exceptional student, whatever they used to call students, gifted. That's what it was. Oh God, gifted.
Oh, gifted and talented.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Traumatized child. How about that? because that was me. And
no, I mean, it has a people-pleasing element to it too, though. The gifted and talented label tells me that you have figured out how to conform to these standards quicker than your peers at that age or that grade level, because you've had to. You have had to have that practice. You have to know how to blend seamlessly and chameleon and do your level best to be the best. Because if you're not, then that arbitrary rule sheet that your abuser is keeping is going to change.
Yeah.
It gives you this false sense of control. But when you're looking at it in a school setting, then, oh, you're so gifted. You're the teacher's pet. You're doing everything that we're asking of you. How lovely. Here you go. You can have this different recess class.
Absolutely. And yeah, like the incentives there. And like I said, that's what my parents told me. They were like, we don't have the money to send you to college. Either get a scholarship or go to the army. I was like, okay, school. Let's do that one. So I got a Fulbright scholarship to college. Like I said, on the outside looking in, you think I would have been celebrating, happy, joyful. I was relieved because I knew what I was leaving. But the fear of coming up to a city, I went from Charlotte, North Carolina to Philadelphia with two suitcases. Here we go. New city. And whatever I was met with, those feelings from that childhood trauma that was just bottled up, I found the quickest way to numb it. Let me grab a book. Let me grab a beer. Let me grab this. Let me grab that. And it was just the distractions were, and like I said, small town girl from the South, and now I'm in this big city. I was like, oh, I have all of these nice little pretty things to distract me from what was going on down there in that dirty little town. Wonderful. Mm-hmm. And a year later, I'm a full-blown alcoholic in college.
Yep.
I had to look back and I'm like, yeah, I was the gifted student. But here I was still excelling in my college classes, still at the top of the class, still getting kudos by day by my professors. But on the inside, I was just like, why don't I feel any better? Why do I still feel trapped? And it's because I was still in that traumatized box. And when the relationship between victims and abusers can get so messy, because most of abusers, you know them. And if you know them, most of the time out of that group, they're your family member. So it's so hard to look at this person like, are you okay? Why are you doing this to me? And just the way our life circumstances were around us, once again, Kim, like you spoke to, being able to adapt to those situations so quickly, I saw how my world around me was changing. But that was an adult's responsibility to take on that feeling of, I need to do something. Here I was, 12, 13, 14 years old, looking around like, oh, we don't have a house to live in no more. Oh, we don't have a car anymore. And, oh, we don't have food. Oh, and I'm now putting you into these positions where if I don't do X, Y, and Z, oh, now we don't have a house. Oh, now we don't have food. Oh, now we don't have clothes. Great position to put a kid in. What do you think I'm going to choose? And, you know, it got to a point where I've already been down the road of trying to tell people. So let's just do this for as long as it takes before I can leave. I graduated. 2 weeks later, I was out. My dad actually tried to sabotage the day of me leaving. Literally, the day, the morning of, tried to sabotage the whole entire situation. And it took me getting on the phone to a family member like, hey, you know I graduated. You know I have this Fulbright scholarship. I can get on this plane at 9:30 and I'm 10 minutes away. Can you do this? And she said yes. And I was like, oh, thank you. Because if it was up to him, I'm probably not going to make it up there. I'm not. I'm really not. And the relief that I felt just sitting on the plane, it was just crazy. Because I just couldn't believe like what I left. And then I was scared because I left my brother there. And he had his own abuse with him that he was going through. It was more physical and mental. I don't know if anything sexually happened with him, but I watched him be very physically and mentally abusive to my younger brother, which led him to be the way that he is, and not in a bad way at all, because my younger brother is thriving in the best ways possible. But those years that I got stolen from me, I just saw it in the same way, like happened to him. And I'm just like, that broke my heart, because I felt like, so everything I went through was for nothing, because I'm gone. And it's just like, number two, I had to then look at it, like start to take me out of it and understand that this was a pattern that like was starting to happen, which is why I feel like I just need to continue to share my story, because it's not as uncommon as we think. And it's not as, this idea that just fall from the sky and land in someone's lap. Like, oh, let's try this. Like I said, this idea was not created once I was born. This was something that was a character of someone for a long time and was able to create a community of people around him that were enablers, that believed everything he said, that were supposed to be protectors of mine as well, but weren't in the end. And that is not uncommon. We see that every day. The fear that I had, the overexcelling that I did, the patterns don't change. Just like I'm not sure who the survivor was that Kara was just speaking of, but certain things just don't change. And when I'm just in the community and I'm at schools and I'm speaking and I hear things, I hear conversations of girls talking, and I'm like, I have to stop myself sometimes. I'm like, did I just hear? I didn't just hear that. And I have to leave, because not to say, oh, after me, everything was just supposed to stop, because who am I? But I can't believe that there was a point in time where I felt like this was only happening to me. And I'm hearing conversations of this possibly happening to a group of girls that I just spoke to almost 10 years later, and they're getting better at it. Like, oh my God, I have to pace myself. Mm-hmm. I have to pace myself, and I have to be gentle with myself, because I have this joke where I'm like, hood me could respond one way and healed me could respond a totally different way. So act accordingly.
Yeah, we have those jokes too, where it's like, I said I am healing, not healed.
Yeah.
Which one do you want to respond? But I'm so glad that you spoke to the fact that these things happen, because I think so often, in, I guess, the societal idea of what trafficking looks like, people think of the movie Taken. They think of someone being snatched in a parking lot by a stranger. That happens, of course, but so much more often, trafficking is more of a domestic situation, whether that be a significant other, a family member, a parent. There are so many other nuances that are much, much more common. And I think that by you going and sharing your story, so many people will feel less alone.
Yeah.
And they will feel that it's not their fault and that they are not to blame. And mm-hmm. ultimately, I think the best part of doing this job and sharing your story is when you see people heal because of your healing. Yes.
Yeah.
And I just want to like affirm what you're doing and encourage you to just keep going and just keep being gentle with yourself.
So I have this question that's kind of been rolling around in the back of my mind as you're talking through this story, and just the hopelessness that you have to feel knowing that you tried to use your voice and then was silenced and downright punished for it.
Yeah.
How, after all those years and that escape, sitting in the plane, realizing you're leaving that behind, when did you start to find your voice again? What did that look like for you?
Oh my gosh.
Coming at you with the deep question. Sorry.
I mean, I know it's a lot to think of. Some people, it's just like a click, a moment. Some people, it's more of a creeping feeling. What do you think yours was?
Yeah. And you also, I call them fake outs. I'm so sports minded, like naturally. So the terms I use, you're like, girl, I'm like,
I will track. Yes.
I'm just like, yeah.
No, Kara, I see you in the gym. Stop playing.
Oh, no. That is an adult thing. I grew up riding horses. Kim calls me a horse girl.
No, I mean, yes.
Oh, that's awesome.
See, okay, but Kara it works out, not sports minded. I, recovering athlete, and hate any kind of physical activity cardio wise, like going and working out. No, thank you.
Horizontal running
sort of deal. So we're like complete opposites, but I'm getting the sports analogies. Keep them coming.
That is so funny. But yeah, so fake outs. You think you're feeling good again, and then something happens. You're like, oh, I lied to myself. And I say it in that way because that's exactly what I would say to myself in those moments. Like I said, I share all this publicly. I'm not afraid of anyone ever using anything against me. It's already happened. I laugh now because I'm like, you actually got that part wrong. Let me help you out. but I've been in two mental institutions. The first one for 10 days and the second one for 5 days. I understand that you feel like you're on that right track. Something hits you and you feel like rock bottom is an understatement because you're like, I felt rock bottom, like no pun intended. Like I know what the bottom feels like, but this one hurts. This one don't feel good. Trying to find my identity as a child and not being able to find my true identity, just taking what I could grab and being like, all right, this looks good. Let's go with this. And then understanding that along with that good baggage that you thought you were just taking, Miss Ma'am, there's a whole bunch of other things in that bag too that aren't good, that when you're looking for those good presents, you're going to find them cold. You're going to be like, ew, get out of my face. And for me, those colds were arguments with my dad, arguments with my husband, where my emotions were so out of control to the point where I'm acting like Tasmanian devil. That was me. And I'm not afraid to share that because I feel like one stigma against survivors is that once we get to a certain level, we have to be perfect. We can't have any bad days. We can't yell. We can't do anything but just be grateful for the earth and God. And that's it. And I'm like, listen, yes, I'm grateful for all those things. But guess what? My dog and my husband and my clients got on my nerves all before 9 o'clock this morning. So guess what? I'm not having a good morning so far, but I'm going to get it together. I'm going to try and bring it back. And this is me now at 26. When I was 17, 18, 19, 20, 21, 22, 23, 24, it started to kick in a little bit. I think I was 24 with my, I got to ask my husband. I think I was 24 or 25 with my last hospitalization. And the hospitalizations weren't me needing something. Of course, some things needed to be fixed. But I realized that as you go on life, you're always going to be met with something that's going to trigger you, that's going to make you respond like you want to just bash someone's head in so hard. Like all of the frustration, anger that you never got to use. Yeah, you're probably never going to be able to let that out in the ways that you want to. I found like I have to apologize to myself for that. Not to say that I did anything wrong, but it's like, girl, I'm sorry. I'm so sorry you never get to release that.
Yeah.
Because that's a lot for a child to take on and just be like, I have to be the one that has to choose the healthy way out. I'm the one that has to go and be resourceful and try and find all these mental health resources and find people that will be a support system. Like, I got to be the one to do that. Okay. It's only going to make me better. So I do have a choice, but I'm going to do it because I don't want to end up like y'all. And if you were to ask me what my biggest fear over all is, like over everything, it's that. It's being anything close to what made me. So to answer your question, to when I finally felt like I had my voice, when I realized that I never lost it, I just had to figure out how to use it in the right way. And...
oh, okay. And we'll see you next week.
I am too pregnant for this.
Kim just melted it.
Oh, that's so perfect, though. I think that's exactly what people need to hear, though. Like, I somehow have been in this field doing this work, and I've never heard anybody say that.
No.
You don't have to find your voice. You never freaking lost it. You just have to remember how to use it. Thank you.
Yeah, and it took a long time. You know, I went to a PWI, private white institution, as a little Spanish Black girl. So I already knew what I was up against when I came up here. But I was like, you know what? I got it. I got this. I'm not going to say I'm going to do this within the first year I'm here. I've been in Philly for 9 years now. So it's been a hell of a journey. And then also, too, I was looking for the spaces where my voice was going to be accepted. Instead of just saying, who the fuck cares? Who accepts your story? Who cares? If they don't accept it, it's not the right space. Keep it moving because somebody needs to hear it. And I used to get so hung up on the rooms or the spaces or the people that weren't as inviting and receiving to just me as a person, because before I ever wanted to speak, before I ever wanted to be an attorney or whatever I had an idea, I was just a girl who just needed to be loved. And I came up here and I tried to find so many mentors, just so many women that I could just be around because I don't know what that looks like. I was raised by some weird people. So just show me what a different side of life looks like. It's very amazing to see how people can still close that door. And it's like, damn. But then it's really crazy. 7, 8 years later, they're circling back, asking you to now speak at their event. Or now they want to sit down and have a conversation with me. And I'm like, like, no, thank you. Needed that like 7 years ago. And all I just needed from you was maybe just a nice empowering conversation that I could just hold with me and take on for like, that could keep me going for another couple of weeks. So, but like I said, no one knew what I was going through. And I didn't want anyone to, because the last thing I wanted to do was for someone to look at me and feel sorry for me or to take advantage of me even further.
Reach to the choir here.
Yeah. So it's amazing to see the narratives that people will create just because they see you every day. Me telling my story now is not made to make people feel bad, but I hope the next time a girl comes up to you that's not from here and wants to just have a conversation or ask you to be their mentor, don't just be so quick to brush them off, because you never know what that will mean to that person, you know? And even now, I don't have any hate, malice, any of that for those people. I'm like, you know what? They were probably going through something and they didn't have the capacity for me, and that's okay. But I've learned now how I need to create my circle. I know now what I'm up against when I choose to share my story. It's like, girl, you already know you're going to make people feel some type of way. When have you not made people feel some type of way? So, yeah, I never lost it.
As you're talking about that, we constantly come back to the look. People find out what you went through and they give you the look. Kara experienced this with Elizabeth Smart, and you know the look. I think every survivor has some kind of way that they would describe that, that they feel that they internalize it. And I don't mean to speak for all survivors, but I am very confident in saying we don't want your pity. We want change.
Yeah.
We don't want your pity. We need change. We need this to stop. We need things and systems in place to make sure that this does not keep happening and that we are supported. The last thing that we want is pity.
So on that note of we don't want pity, we want change. You are one of the people that's out here trying to make a change. You're sharing your story. Tell us about what that looks like for you, what you're doing now, and why that's important to you.
Oh, yeah. I'd be out here in these streets. Definitely. I'm definitely I'm out here in these streets type of girl. But yes, exactly. I'd be out here in these streets always finding ways to connect with people. And the way that I do that is I love kids. Like I said, the reasons why I pour into kids is because I was missing so much as a kid. But there were places and there were certain figures when I was a kid that did empower me. All parts of my childhood were not bad. I will say everything outside of the house was wonderful. I got to school, wonderful. People loved me. Playing sports, people loved me. All my friends' parents loved me. Like, it was great outside of the house. I never wanted to go home. I did everything possible to not have to go home. My childhood outside of the house was not bad at all. So I realized that the only way I would have found out about those places was talking to people. You hear about, oh yeah, I was playing with so-and-so. Where's that at? Oh, over there. And I'm just an adult now going to those same places, popping up at the youth centers, popping up at the gyms. I have so many friends that are teachers now. So going down to the schools, asking if they have kids that are just hanging around after school, that they don't have anything to do, but are looking for something to do. It all starts with the kids. I really do believe that. So whenever I find a way to do something, I will always do it if it has to do with kids. And the way that I do it is not lecturing them, because who wants to sit in front of someone and hear them lecture all day? Not after being in school, but what I do is I say, what do you guys like to do? You hear all these things, video games, playing, whatever. I make that an event. I have a community day coming up the end of next month for one of the more like impoverished areas of Philly. Drug rates are very, very high. Homelessness is very, very high in these areas. And it's so oversaturated. The square mileage is very, very small. I would say it's almost like a, not even a 20 block radius, maybe if that, as far as where this area is. And crazy thing is, so many kids. And what we're doing is I'm having a community day. There's going to be a free workout in the beginning. LA Fitness is going to be one of our sponsors. I'm having like a bunch of community sponsors. It's going to be a live DJ. She's 17. She's a DJ and she's just starting out. So like she's going to be there. So I always try and do things that one showcases what the power of our youth can do. I didn't know any 17-year-old DJs when I was a kid, when I was 17 years old. But 10 years later, almost, I know a 17-year-old DJ. That's amazing. People need to see her, which is why I created my nonprofit called See Us, was because I needed someone to see me as a kid. That's why I was the best athlete. That's why I was the best student, because I was like, they're not seeing me. So like I was getting all the wrong attention at home, all the wrong attention. I wanted people to see me for the positive things that I was doing as a kid. A few people did, which is why I'm here today. But there needs to be more of me where a kid doesn't have to jump through the ringer and take on so much as I did to get here. And that's another thing, the mental exhaustion, the physical exhaustion that I felt once I was up here. I thought I was going to be up here, out the door, ready to go. I was so tired. I remember just sleeping to the point where I wasn't even having sex, but I was like, I'm not pregnant. What is going on? Like, why? What's wrong with me? Why am I just sleeping? I was never doing this when I was home. And I was like, oh my God, I'm up here by myself. I'm being lazy because I don't. And that's another thing too, is that because of what I was conditioned to, once I was up here on my own, I was placing those same conditions on myself and putting myself in that same restrictive mode that I was in because I did not know how to operate any other way. As soon as I was doing something outside of my regular routine, I felt off. And the thing was, it was just the fact that I wasn't used to it. And not to mention, I was still talking to my dad. So when I would say things like, I'm just waking up from taking a nap, why are you napping? Why are you being lazy? And I'm like, okay, so now I got to hide the fact that I'm napping. Okay, I just got to college all by my freaking self. Okay, no problem.
And like in reality, the reason you're napping is because your body finally feels safe to recover. It's as simple as that, right? And Here you are getting shamed and getting like drugged back into it.
By the person who put you in that state in the first place.
Yeah, the dark humor jokes that go on in my house about that man are really funny. Really funny, because I have a really funny sense of humor and I love to laugh. So I've learned now that I'm like, my trauma is actually really funny when I like make jokes about it.
Right. You are in good company here. Yeah. It's like Kim's favorite source of humor is like dark humor. I mean, mine too, obviously, but Kim's like, at least it made me funny. Like,
I feel like it's definitely healing.
I know. Well, I feel like people that have like really been through the darkness, I can't say that without thinking of like Bane from Batman. Like, You merely adapted to the darkness. Anyway, but I feel like people who have actually been through it, I am in a pit and there's no light down here. So I'm gonna make my own freaking light.
Yep.
Like if I'm gonna be here, I'm at least gonna be laughing at the ridiculousness and the absurdity of this situation. So you can be awkward about it and not know how to handle it, or you could just laugh with me. It's fine. I have to tell people all the time, like, no, you can laugh.
There's a sense of regaining that control too, because if you are taking this really crappy situation and you're making it funny, that's putting the control in your hands. And it's not even, it's not negating what you went through. It's not minimizing. Yeah. It's a shift in perspective. Like, okay, that stuff sucks. It would also suck if that's all we ever talked about and didn't look at the absurdity and the way that we can light this in a way that other people are not going to be immediately turned off when we talk about it, because you get the dog to take the pill by hiding it in the cheese. And what better way to present said cheese than with humor? Ha ha.
Are you calling me a dog?
You should be so lucky.
Oh, Kara.
Speaking of which, I do need some mental health serotonin puppies pretty soon.
Yes. Kim gets foster dogs for her mental health.
Yep. Dark humor and foster puppies. So
that's what Kim is made up of.
I know. It's a lot of hair and laughs. Ha ha. Hair that I didn't grow myself. I used to buy my own hair too. Let's talk about clip-in extensions on the next episode. So tell us a little bit more about where we can find you and the See Us campaign.
Yeah. So See Us campaign right now. We have our Instagram page. So if you just type in See Us campaign, very simple. Can't forget it. Can't mess that one up. We do have a GoFundMe page going on right now. I know in 2023, that's like, so, not a GoFundMe page, but we are in the beginning stages. I'm not a scammer, guys, I promise. We are in the beginning stages of fundraising for our curriculums that we have going out very soon, for some fundraising events that we have going on for the kids, or some back to school events that we're planning. I'm trying to put together a Take Back the Night sneaker gala.
I love it.
I know when I said it, you guys were gonna get it. I know. I'm trying. It's May. I'm trying to have it for October for its Domestic Violence Awareness Month. You see, you guys are picking up when I'm putting down. Mm-hmm. Yes. So we have a lot of things coming up that I'm trying to get funding for. So if you guys follow CS campaign, you'll see how you can support the GoFundMe page. If you'd like to follow moi, I'm Benzi Diaz, B-E-N-Z-I-I Diaz, on TikTok, Instagram, Facebook. Pretty active on all of those. Try to be as active as I can. If I don't respond to DMs, sorry. So sorry.
We all just are out here doing our best.
I can't believe I have to say that now. Like, am I that girl that has to say that now to people? Like, I'm sorry if I don't see your message right now. But I really am sorry, though. I'm just one person right now. Entrepreneur life. Me and my husband. You know, when you're married, they're like, they're your permanent assistant. So like, whatever I don't do, it's his job. Love you, babe.
But do they do it?
He does. You see, you guys, I FaceTimed him. He came right up.
I know.
He did help on the IT side.
You just bless that man. You just give him a little pat on the back. Like, thank you. I love you so much.
Yeah, no. That's my baby.
Well, Benzi, I cannot thank you enough for joining us today, for being so vulnerable and sharing a story that I know is just going to touch the hearts of so many people that are out there listening, as well as it did for me and for Kara. And I am just in awe of everything that you have created, the healing that you have just taken hold of and are doing and putting out into the world is stunning, as are you.
I cried enough.
I am just really
you made us cry.
Yeah. Payback. All right, as my children would say, reverse card.
Uno reverse.
Yes, the Uno reverse. But really, thank you so much for everything that you are doing. I know you're just getting started, and I can tell this is going to be the beginning of something much, much larger, and you're going to make huge changes in this world.
Oh, thank you. Thank you so much. I'm looking at the time. I'm like, an hour and 6 minutes. That's a long time. But I'm like, I've never wanted to not end an interview, but I'm like, we all got stuff to do. Like, we gotta go on about the day. But no, I know this will be a forever thing. So Thank you.
You are part of the group now. Join the club. We've got jackets soon.
Don't tempt me with a good time. You know I love merch.
We probably should actually have jackets. Okay, that's the merch. Okay, I got it. Do we drop jackets in the middle of the summer? Is that like, that's probably not a wise marketing move.
That's a fall. Members only jackets.
I made that mistake. Learn from me. Don't do that. Don't do it.
Don't do hoodies right before summer. Yeah.
But they'll be ready for next year.
Yes. Well, thank you again.
All right.
So much. This has been wonderful. And we can't wait to talk to you soon.
Thank you. Bye.
Survivor's Guide to True Crime is hosted and executive produced by Kimberly Corbin Rourke and Kara Robinson Chamberlain. If you love what we do here, please don't forget to follow, rate, and review the show in your podcast player. It's an easy and free way to help us and help more people find the show. To learn more about the guests featured or to find resources and information discussed on the show, visit survivorsguidetotruecrime.com. Thanks for listening.
Well, see you later.
Good job.